So, I'm going to do some sitting and standing. Hope it doesn't make you uncomfortable or anything.
Only four lat also.
You can take walks also. I've seen it all. So, safer bracious. I know there are only five, technically, but this is straight away my favorite. It's just packed. There are such strong characters. There are people that we are meant consciously to form connections with on a familial level, to see in their actions and their thoughts and feelings, our actions and thoughts and feelings, obviously to learn from them, but even on a deeper level, as the Ramban talks about the famous idea of Ma'aseh Avot Siman L'Banim, but not simply the way we tend to think of that as there are lessons that we should learn from them, but more like DNA of their actions and their decisions and their spiritual connections to things are implanted in us as people. So a Siman L'Banim is not just a sign or a symbol that we should learn from, but actually more like a sign engraved in us that this is who we are. And thinking about that, we obviously have three main characters, the third of which we met last week, or 2 days ago, Tolda. We have Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. And Avram, we certainly hear a lot about, although at the same time, if you think about it, Avram, there are a lot of stories we don't hear about, or a lot of parts of these stories that we're not hearing about at all. We don't hear how he found out about God. We don't hear about the whole fiery furnace thing at all. That Ke'ilu never happened, according to the Torah, as far as we know. If you even look at maybe the climax of his Avodas Hashem, the Akedas Yitzchak, it's very robotic. Especially if you compare it to other tense stories like the Brachot of Parsha Toldot from last week, where there's a lot of back and forth, where there's crying, where there's stress, where there's an emotionally filled situation. With Avram, it's he woke up and he grabbed some sticks and he went. And that's all we know about Avram. Yitzchak, we obviously know even less about. Yitzchak's You're just on time. We didn't get anywhere yet. Just in the intro. Yitzchak, we have maybe 3.5 stories about him, and 1.5 of them are not even about him. One of them is called Akedas Yitzchak, but it's not about him. His next biggest story is about how someone else found his wife. That was all about him, but he wasn't in the story. And then there are some things about him having to dig up some wells, which is exactly what his father did, and then having to go to Gerar, which is exactly what his father did. So there's very, very little substance. And then we get to Yaakov, and it's almost obvious that the Torah wants us to view him as the main character here, that this was building up to this. The stories are deeper, they're more detailed. You hear more about what's going on in his mind or his perspective and not just what happened. And this is not, obviously, by mistake. We are called B'nai Yisrael after him. We are not, obviously, we are called B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but we are called, as a nation, B'nai Yisrael. And this whole introduction is meant to highlight the fact that what the person that we're about to look closely at is meant to very accurately mirror the journey that we take as people and as individuals even, that there is something about this human being and the situations that he was in and the life that he lived that is meant to parallel us and our journey in a way that isn't the same case when it comes to Avraham and when it comes to Yitzchak. These are people we were supposed to look up to, supposed to connect with, but not supposed to necessarily see our lives and our journey in. Because I'll talk about Akedas Yitzchak, the reason why it was called Akedas Yitzchak and not Akedas Avraham, even though the story was about Avraham, was because there's no way we should even try and see ourselves as living up to what Avraham did. It's not possible. then maybe the thing that we could see us doing, or the spiritual level we could get to, is Yitzhak, who was willing to give up his own life. Maybe. And that shows you that there's still a little distance between the people that we call our avot and our own lives. But that's not the case with Yaakov. With Yaakov, we're supposed to see ourselves. And this week's parsha in Vayetze is the beginning of Yaakov's long, difficult journey through Gullus, through exile. Literally the first word of the parsha, Vayetze. He leaves. Which, as you, if you look at Rashi, is actually redundant because he already left a few psukim earlier, and it says that he left Haran. He left for Haran. And yet, this parsha starts with Vayetze, as if we need to solidify the fact that this is the beginning of a new chapter, of him leaving, of him being outside of his homeland. And in order to truly understand where we fit in our gullus and in this long history that sometimes feels like a story and sometimes maybe just me begin to say, okay, wait, is there really an ending here? Are we really that close? When's the finish line exactly? So it's important for us to investigate while his life is open right in front of us, while the book is open, to understand, at the very least, what his gullus was and why it existed and what it is for, what the purpose of this gullus is for in his life, and maybe what we can take from it. To the best of my ability, I will be quoting some sources here. Some of the ideas here I couldn't find, but I thought of on my own, so if they don't seem right, it's my fault and not anyone on the page. So there's an interesting medrash, if you look at source number 2, that points out that when someone goes to gullus, it's usually because they did something wrong. There's usually a reason why someone has to leave. Not just in life, people are forced out of their homes. So it says in the Sefer Or Gedaliah, he quotes this medrash, Medrash Tanchuma, Medama Yitzias Yaakov Avinu Legalos, Ledino Shel Hahoreg Nefesh Bishkaga Shemechuyav Legalos. The medrash equates, or actually compares, the leaving of Yaakov Avinu into exile to someone who accidentally murders someone else who is required by law, by Jewish law, to go into exile, to run away, famously to the Arei Miklat, right? That this was like he was given the sentence of exile. Why was he given this sentence? Ki kamosha be'esha chiyus shel adam nifsak al yedei acher b'shogeg chayav ha'horgo galus. Because just like at the moment when someone's life is ended, is put to an end by the hands of someone else, unintentionally, they must go. The person who killed that other person must go into exile. Kein yesh b'china zu gam kishen nifsa kachius de kedusha shaladim. Similarly, when someone puts an end to someone else's spiritual life, there is a form of murder here, or manslaughter, I guess you would call it. And what happened in this case? Lachain. Kevan she Esav nidche al yedei Yaakov Avinu nischayev Yaakov galus. And as a result of Yaakov taking the bracha from Esav, he essentially ended his spiritual life. His only bracha he got was, you're going to have a lot of stuff and you're going to be a nation too, basically. But his spiritual mission ended right then and there when Yaakov was able to get the bracha from his father. And it was a form of manslaughter, spiritual manslaughter, or soul slaughter, if you will. And because of that, he had to go into gullus, which makes it sound like this is punitive, which we very much relate to when we think of gullus. Gullus is punitive. We do something wrong, we get kicked out. We know this from school, and we know this from real world history when we were in our homeland and we did the wrong thing, and God in the Torah, or Moshe, even predicted it and said, you're going to do the wrong thing and you're going to get thrown out. But it's strange. It seems like this Medrash is like, you know, there's something there. Maybe like me, this was the first time that you came across this idea that Yaakov was actually being punished for doing this, because there is no way to look at it as him doing this out of spite or to harm in any way. If anything, he was following his mother's orders and would have gotten punished for not doing that. It's a strange approach to the cause for Galus. So it caused me to look back at the story and to look deeper into, where does this Galus come from? Where is this defining thing in Yaakov's life? Because again, who is Yaakov as a person? We know, because the Torah actually said, who is this person that we're looking at? It's an Ish Tam Yoshev Olim. Sits, kol guy, sits, learns, doesn't bother anyone, probably not the athletic type, just enjoys reading, learning, being at home. Not much of a hiker, probably. Not much of an adventurer. No wild side. And then we see what happens with his life, which is the most extreme version of a life that you could think of, where he's traveling alone across large distances, where he's waging wars against other people, where he's working for 20 years in a field. The Yoshev Olim had to work for 20 years in a field. His life is absolutely the opposite of how it started. And it seems strange that from taking a bracha that he actually acquired and that his mother commanded him to take, his whole life has to change. So I want to look deeper. And if you look at source number 3, we're not going to read all the psukim. This is simply the psukim from last week's parsha of Toldos, of the whole sequence of events of Yaakov getting the bracha from Yitzchak. We know the story. I imagine we've read it once or twice before in our lives, how Rivka actually is the one that comes up with this idea after overhearing Yitzchak commanding Esav to go get an animal from the field, sees an opportunity, says, Yaakov, you got it, now's your chance. Here's Esav's clothes. Here's some skin, goat skin to put on. Go get some goats from outside. Prepare them for your father. Tell him you're Esav. Take the bracha. You have to do this. He says, what if I'm caught? Rivka says, it will be on me, not on you. And he does it. And if you'll notice, and this is what's so amazing about Sefer Bereishis, the situation, I mean, someone needs to make a movie out of this. I do say this a lot about Sefer Bereishis. But the tenseness of that room, where you see Yaakov, who knows he's a fraud, in front of his blind father Yitzchak, who doesn't know who's standing in front of him and has to ask him over and over. He asks first, tell me who you are. And then he says, come over here so I'll feel your arms. And then he notices that there's an inconsistency. And then he asks to come over here and hug him and kiss him. And then he still wasn't sure. And then he gives him the bracha. So number one, Yitzchak is not sure who this is. Famously, he says, Akol kol Yaakov ayadayim de Esav, which if you put the math to that pasuk, we're looking at a 50-50 chance that this is the right person, right? Out of the two possible people that this could be, it's 50% one guy, 50% the other guy. That is not good odds. None of us are gamblers here, I imagine. Bad odds. And then he continues. And he says, are you my son Esav? And he says, yeah, I am. And then he says, come here so I could eat from your food. And he felt his arms again, and he ate. And then he says, come here so I could hug you and kiss you. Again, this is very extensive investigation on Yitzchak's part, which seems to indicate that he's very unsure of what's going on here. And then it finishes by saying, and he didn't know who it was, Velohi Kiru, but then he gave him the bracha. It's a strange way to end this sequence of events. How Yitzchak ends not necessarily being sure who it is, but still giving him the bracha. One issue. Another issue. We know that the reason why Yitzchak said Hakol Kol Yaakov Ayidayim De Esav was because he felt the arms, and the arms felt like Esav's arms, but what did he hear? He heard the voice of Yaakov. It was unmistakably Yaakov. He used Hashem's name. He said, "Nah, please." He talked nicely. I imagine these two people, if you're envisioning them, they have two very different voices. And it struck me as weird that Yaakov seemingly didn't attempt to hide his voice. It looked like he wasn't trying. And if you have someone who can't see, there's essentially three senses being used in this story by Yitzchak to try and figure out who this is. He listens, he feels, and at the end, actually, he smells. He smells his clothes and says, "Oh, this is the Reach of the Sada." We'll get to that in a second. How could Yaakov have overlooked this very important detail in his plan? How could he have not thought, the minute I start sounding like Yaakov, Yitzchak's going to think I'm Yaakov? It was probably harder for Esav to sound like Yaakov than for Yaakov to feel like Esav. I feel like out of those two things, which are the stronger indication of who it is? I imagine if it felt like Esav, but it sounded exactly like Yaakov, it's unmistakable. So why did Yitzchak keep going along with this? And why did Yaakov not do a better job at what he was supposed to do? So, I want to claim something. It's a theory. It doesn't work perfectly with the psukim. Disclaimer. But I then find some interesting sources afterwards to back up that there's something much deeper going on here. Much deeper than just someone went and tricked and deceived and got something and he thought it was really one person, but it was really someone else. That there's something much deeper going on. And here's my theory. Yaakov never wanted to trick Yitzchak. It wasn't his intention. He didn't go in thinking he would trick him. And the proof is he didn't even try. He put on the clothes of Esav because Rivka told him to. Rivka didn't tell him to disguise his voice, if you notice that detail. And Yaakov didn't. So what the heck was he doing if he wasn't tricking his father? He was trying to communicate with his father. Now, if you notice, there's a theme here in this family, in this particular family. Communication is really bad. Did you notice that? There are so many times in the story, if you read it back, you think, just talk to each other. Rivka, just talk to Yitzchak and tell him, you know, by the way, Esav's really a terrible kid. I know he's my kid too, but there's no way that this is going to work out with him. Why didn't you have the conversation? There's so many times where this happens, and this actually goes back to the beginning of the relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak. When they see each other, Rivka falls off the camel. There's this awe, there's this reverence for Yitzchak. There's this understanding that he is an angel, an angelic figure. So the way they communicated in this family was different. And this event was not meant to deceive, but to communicate a message. And that message was the following. Yitzchak, my father, I know you intended to give this bracha to Esav because you feel it is rightfully his, or because he is going to use it in the right way, in the way that you intended, but it is not the case. You're mistaken, unfortunately. And I am the one who can properly utilize that bracha. And there are two parts to this. Number one, Esav is wrong. Esav's not the guy. But that doesn't mean that Yaakov is the guy. Because remember, Yaakov is an Ish Tam Yoshev Olim. And the bracha, I didn't quote it here, is V'yitein lecha Elokim mital shamayim. It's this heavily gashmi bracha. A bracha of being a leader, a king, essentially, of men on this earth. And kol guy and king don't necessarily mesh. So Yaakov couldn't just say, don't give it to Yitzchak, because if said it to Esav. Because if he said that, it still doesn't give Yitzchak a solution to who he should give this bracha to. What he had to say even further than that was, give it to me. Because I can be the Esav figure here. I can be Yaakov, and I could be Esav. I could be both. This is what Rivka's intention was when telling him to get the bracha. The tafkid of Esav here is lost. There's no one to fill it. Now, we didn't talk about what Esav's tafkid is. We'll get to that. Whatever Yitzchak had intended to give to his son Esav as an inheritance, as a leader of this nation, it is lost. Esav is not going to do it. And that means there is only one other person that can fulfill that piece of this destiny of the Jewish people, and that is you, Yaakov. It all rides on you, which means you can't just be Yaakov anymore. You have to be Yaakov and Esav. You have to be both. Which means, dress up like Esav, but don't stop being Yaakov, because you need to communicate to your father, Yitzchak, that you are both Yaakov and Esav. And that's why, when Yitzchak felt him and heard his voice, he said, Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayadayim de Esav, and that wasn't by mistake, that was by design. Yaakov wanted him to feel both people here. And more Yitzchak kept asking, who is this? Who am I talking to? Who am I feeling? He began to realize that there are two people here. He's interacting with some form of mutation of his sons, where there's this one person. And instead of being confused by that, somehow it allowed him, it gave himself permission to give the bracha to this person. Which again, in normal circumstances, it would make no sense to give the bracha unless the message was received. That now I can feel good giving the bracha to Yaakov because I know he will do the tafkid of Esav as well. That's the theory. There are some proofs that I have, not on these psukim itself, but that show us that there's this duality here that was meant to happen that didn't end up happening, and that Yaakov ended up becoming a version of Esav as well. Source number 4, the Shem Yishmuel. Starting from the first bold, Umuvan. Umuvan tikashen noldu b'shilya achat, heim shneyem ki ish echad b'leiv achat. Shem Yishmuel points out something interesting. When there are twins, they're born from the same, I don't know, they're in the same womb. They're from the same egg, egg that splits in half, I think. I don't want to get too detailed. But there's a sense of unity in that situation. There is a sense of two people that came from one source, as opposed to obviously two separate children born at two separate times. These are two people that came from one source. Yitzchak thought, it's obvious then that they are connected in this mystical way as one unified being. Magam kisheshneim tzadikim umatara achat l'shneim. It must be they're both tzadikim, and they both have the same purpose ultimately. And the bracha that I give to them, each of them separately, really apply to each other collectively in some way. Profound. Totally changing the landscape of this situation, where it's not that Yitzchak's choosing one over the other. or separating them. He's actually bringing them together by giving them these different purposes within the same plan. And then he goes on, V'kacha haya choshev et Esav kimo melech. He thought of Esav as the king, the military, so to speak, or the leader of the Jewish people. Shelibo lev ha'am ve'enenu chaluk mehem klal v'tovasohi tovasam, etc. Going to the column on the left. U'b'midrash k'shera Shmuel as David Admoni nityarei me'enenu dome le'esav. I don't know if you ever heard of this connection, but that there is this understanding that David HaMelech, who had the same physical characteristics of Esav, he was a redhead, he was in the field when Shmuel found him, that Shmuel was like, wait, this is reminding me of someone not good. He was scared. How could I give the king, the kingship of the Jewish people to someone who was a little shtickle like Esav? Ad sheheshiv lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'chulei. Right, that Hashem settled that. Ubechlal shehayatzad hitz damnut b'shneim, that there is this similarity between David HaMelech and Esav. Ilu haya Esav tzadik, haya yochel liyos b'madrigas David HaMelech. There is this idea, an alternate reality, where Esav was actually going to be David HaMelech, which is super interesting because there is lots of talk about how David HaMelech is on the same madriga as the Avos, but he didn't get the name of Avos because of he wasn't tested like them. There are midrashim like this, that David HaMelech was a pseudo-Av of our nation. And maybe because originally we were supposed to say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov ve'Esav. Maybe that was going to be the way it was supposed to be. Elisha b'zadam libo hafach hakol l'ra'ah, and he went to the dark side, as we can now say, with the Star Wars reference that helps us really understand this story very well, by the way. Just thinking. This is a Darth Vader character at its best. Darth Vader was coming to this, not the other way around. Mikol makom, the middle bold line. Mikol makom Yitzchak shenala mimenu zadon Esav, chashu ki ish echad im Yaakov, ish tam yoshev olim, ela shezeh kemo melech lezeh, vezeh kemo kohen gadol lezeh. We have two leaders of the nation. One is the king, one is the priest. Esav's the king, Yaakov's the priest. It fits perfectly. And then if you go to the last bold, V'hushiyeh hatzinor sha'al yadu yisbarach gam halev v'yetar ha'ivarim v'chol zeh machmas sha'yada sha'nishtana aleim sidur shal olam v'noldo v'krach achad v'shal yachad. This idea where Yitzchak understood that Yaakov and Esav came from one source, they were meant to have one unified purpose, and they simply were two different people that in some way could fulfill this purpose, could complete each other and fulfill this purpose in two different ways. And that's why it makes sense that Yitzchak was convinced that Esav needed to get this bracha, because without it, there's no king. It's not like I could just give this to Yaakov. Yaakov's not a king. Look at him. Not in a bad way. It's not his tafkid. And if Yaakov is the king, who's the kohen gadol? And that's why he needed to be convinced by Yaakov that Yaakov could be the Kohen Gadol and the king. And not only that, one step earlier, Rivka had to convince Yaakov that Yaakov could be the king and the Kohen Gadol. Because if you're in Kola all your life, you're probably not prepared for the news that you just became the king of the greatest nation on earth. So Rivka, actually, if you look back at source number 3, we're not going to look at it inside, look at it yourself, now or later, whenever. Yaakov was very unsure of this plan. He hesitated. He kept saying, well, what about this? What about that? It kind of reminds you of Moshe when Hashem said, you're going to be the leader. What am I going to say to Paro? How's this going to work? They're not going to believe me. My tongue. Yaakov was like, are you sure about this? Do I look like a king to you? Rivka said, wear the clothes. Put on the clothes. If the suit fits, trust me, you're right for the king. And the minute that happened, the minute that Yaakov got the bracha, he became Esav's spiritual destiny. And there's great proof to this. It's my favorite one. It's the aha one, and it's so simple because it works so well. And in source number 5, what does Yaakov do when he leaves? He goes to find a wife. He goes to his uncle Lavan. And Laban has two daughters, Rachel and Leah. Rachel was designated for Yaakov, the younger one. Leah was designated for Esav. It's why she cried all the time. We know the Rashi. And we get to the wedding night, and who does Yaakov marry first? Marries Leah. He was supposed to have one wife, Yaakov and Rachel. Supposed to be very simple. Esav is already married to 15 other Egyptians and Arabs. And instead, Yaakov now has two wives, and that's his reality now. Could it be more clear than that, that Yaakov is literally two families, two destinies in one, in the fact that God made it, that he had to hang out with his creepy uncle, who had to deceive him into marrying someone that he never would have married on his own, that maybe never even thought, you know, now that I have this Esav alter ego, I need to marry his future wife? Maybe that wouldn't have crossed his mind. But God had to take care of the situation to see to it that he would now carry on this destiny of Esav by marrying Leah, who is destined for Esav. But it gets deeper than this. So that was my nice little theory that seems to have some basis here. But this story is actually older than the one we read right now. This story goes back to the beginning of creation. Because we talked about one level of Gullus where someone who accidentally murders someone is sent to Gullus, and that's what we're looking at here, where Yaakov took the spiritual life out of Esav, and for that he needed to leave. But that there's actually a spiritual purpose to this Gullus. It wasn't punitive. It wasn't just now that he's Esav, he got punished for having to leave and because Esav was going to kill him. But now he has a new path. Now his reality isn't that he stays Yoshevo Alim in Israel. I imagine he probably saw his father Yitzchak as the prototype Jew. Doesn't leave Israel. Kind of sticks to himself, that isn't influenced by the foreign world around him. God even commands him never to leave Israel. Sounds like that's what God wants from us Jews. Stay in your land, keep to yourself, learn his Torah, be kind, do good. And then this happens, and then he takes the bracha of Esav and adopts the tafkid of Esav, and then out of here. So let's see what the origin of this story is from. On the other side of the page, source number 6. Continuing in the Or Gedalia, or of Gedalia Shor, but this time in Parsha Zvayetze, our Parsha. Af shehaya mutal gzeras gullus al zaro shel Avram avinu mibrisbein avasarim. We know that already from the time of Avram, it was decreed that we would have gullus. It's not like we needed an excuse to go to gullus. God already said that that would happen. Aval chelek hazeh shel ha'avodah shel halicha begalus hayashayach l'chelek ha'avodah shel Esav. This part of it, the part where we have to wander around Gullus the way Yaakov did, that was shayach to Esav. That was Esav's tafkid. Sheha halicha begalus ikar matarasahu levarer ulilakeit et kol hatov hanivla behara. What is the purpose of wandering around Gullus? It's to literally go on a scavenger hunt in the dark, in the wilderness, looking for clarity, collecting any of the sparks of light hidden in the darkness, any of the good that exists within the bad. More on that in the whole realm of Chassidus. That's basically what they are built on. It is built on. Ve'avoda zu shel birur hatov mehara, shayeches le'etz hadas tov vara. This avoda of clarifying, of extracting the good from the bad, is connected to the Eitz Hadas Tovara plot twist. Shehu Chelko Shel Esav. Bigger twist. This idea of extracting the good from the bad is related to the Eitz Hadas, which is the Chelek of Esav. I didn't say this. This part I didn't make up. I wish I did, though. V'Yaakov Avinu, shehayadav be'etzachayim, the one that doesn't get so much attention because it just sits there and it's perfect, the ishtam of the Eitz Hadas and the Eitz HaChaim, right? Lo hayelo shaychus legalus. He was never meant to take a step out of Eretz Yisrael, out of his home, out of his tent. Virak kishezacha Yaakov Avinu b'chelek ha'avoda shel Esav. It is only when Yaakov took the chelek of Esav away from him and incorporated into his spiritual destiny, that's when Gullus was sealed for Yaakov. That's when he now had to leave. Not as a punishment, but as a purpose. Ukemosha Biyarnu in Parshas told us, Az hayamutal al Yaakov avinu leilech legullus uletakein chelko shel Esav. Once Yaakov Avinu took the tafkid of Esav, he now had this additional responsibility, not just serving God in Geula, in the homeland, but now doing this other path of serving God and of finding God outside, in Golos. And we see, there's a Malbim that I love, it's source number 8, that was a tiny bit of a proof to this idea. I'm not going to go into it now, but it's about this weird story of Vayevater Yaakov Levado in Parshas Vayishlach, where he's left alone because he went back to get little cans of stuff that he left, and then he was approached, confronted by this man, which turned out to be, who does Chazal say it is? Do we know? Vayevik Ishimo. Chazal say that is the Saro Shel Esav, the spiritual angel of Esav. Fit that into the story, kind of interesting. It's almost like, you want to keep my spiritual destiny, Yaakov? You're going to have to take it from me. And he does. What's interesting is the Malbim has a strange lashon here. In source number 8, he talks about this battle, this epic, eternal battle between Yaakov and Esav, where in order to get through this world, you need to decide to go in the path of good and avoid bad. And when you do that, it says at the end, in bold, Va'az yitkayem birkat Yaakov. And once Yaakov chooses good over evil and decides to go in the right path, in that moment, his bracha will come to life, will be fulfilled. What is his bracha? Sheyelo kol Yaakov v'yedei Esav. Koach hatzuri v'achomri. That line is strange to me. Why is that strange? Is it strange to you guys? That then the bracha of Yaakov will be fulfilled. What is the bracha of Yaakov? Sheyelo kol Yaakov v'yedei Esav. Was that his bracha? When did we learn of this phrase, Hakol Kol Yaakov Ayidayim De'esav? It was before the bracha was given. It was literally the opposite of the bracha. It was the part where Yitzchak was unsure if he was going to give the bracha. It was him saying, maybe I shouldn't give you the bracha. And instead the Malbim takes that phrase and says, that's the bracha. The bracha is Hakol Kol Yaakov Ayidayim De'esav. That what Yaakov was trying to pursue when getting the bracha of Esav was to include in his spiritual destiny the Yadayim of Esav. So that he no longer was just the kol of Yaakov, but he also had the Yadayim. And that's what he got from that bracha. He added the Yadayim of Esav. Well, there's something we need to go back to and understand, because we read that weird thing of Eitz Hadas and Eitz HaChaim. Now, there's another story where someone does something and immediately afterwards he has to leave. Who is that?
Adam.
Literally the first story. Adam. Adam HaRishon. Now, there we see it very much as punitive, because God, I mean, it's hard to explain it otherwise. That his punishment for going against his commandment by eating from the Eitz Hadas Tovara was to leave Gan Eden, and not only that, but to have to work the land, to have to be much more tied to Olam Hazeh. Whereas Gan Eden, everything grew on trees. Chazal say, the Rashi quotes a Medrash that I love to talk about, I gave a shiur this past Shavuos on this, that the Eitz Hadas was a wheat tree. Ever hear that? You probably never heard of a wheat tree before either, because they don't exist. But the idea of wheat growing on trees was a Gan Eden thing, where things that you had to usually work for months and plow and plant, and those things grew on trees in Gan Eden. You didn't have to plow for anything. They just grew on, literally everything grew on trees. That's where that thing came from. So, once that sin happens of eating from Tov V'ra, you now have to go and be a part of the world. Leave Gan Eden and be a part of the world. Sounds like an exact parallel to Yaakov. Yaakov was at home, Gan Eden, his parents were around, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yitzchak was rich, by the way, they had money. One day he has to go get a bracha from his father, and his life has changed forever. Kicked out of Gan Eden, Gullus, 20 years, even when he gets back. Yosef's in Gullus. His whole life is Gullus. All because of this Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra. That Yaakov was the Eitz Hachaim. Eitz Hachaim never left Gan Eden, as far as I know. Eitz Hachaim's still there. If you ate from the Eitz Hachaim, I don't think anything happened. I don't know. God didn't say anything about it. But you eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, you have to leave. So the Shem Yishmuel, in source number 9, coming back to him, he elaborates on this point. He says, V'nir lefari shalpim amar ha'chasav avi, she Yaakov ve'esav heim kedimyon eitz hachayim ve'etz hadas tovera. They parallel these two trees. Sheshneim yeshlem koach ha'chibur keteva ha'emtza'i. Ela she'etz ha'chaim mechaber chelkei ha'chaim levad, ve'etz hadas tovera mechaber tovera. Eitz ha'chaim is this pure thing. I don't know what it means to be mechaber life by itself. That life is unified to the point where it's probably one entity, where you don't even see it as two different things. Just everything is chalak, everything is smooth. That was Yaakov, literally smooth. But with the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, it's bringing together two opposites, bringing together two things that are unnaturally combined, that don't go together naturally. Kein Yaakov chiver ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz al yedei she-ha-elah et ha-aretz la-shamayim. So too Yaakov brought together shamayim and aretz by elevating aretz to the two shamayim. The Esav hishpil et ha-shamayim la-aretz. Esav brought shamayim down to the aretz, which is, by the way, another very important yesod in Chassidus. V'nira al pi masha higid ka-kasev. I combined two different sources. This is another source in the Shem Yishmuel. Sheyakov Esav him dugmas Eitz Hachaim veEitz Hadas Tov V'ra. Sheshneim urim v'shorash echad. Echoing what we learned in the previous Shem Yishmuel, that they came from one source. The Eitz Hadas and Eitz Hachaim came from one source, and Yaakov and Esav did too. So what do we learn from this? That there's really two versions of Avodas Hashem. There's the version where everything's smooth, everything's good, it's all light, it's all happiness, we're at home. And then there's this version where everything's confusing, where it's all mixed up, where there's a lot of bad in front of us, and our job is to find that good within the bad. No one tafkid is better than the other. No one tafkid is more important than the other. They're just very different. They're very different ways of traveling through this earth on our way back. One of them seems to be the easy path, and one of them seems to be the long way, where you have to do a lot of different stops. And if you think about it, the mixing of Tovara is really what Olam Hazeh is about. The idea that everything here can be viewed as something that we can take advantage of, to see God within. And then, at the same time, everything in this world can be brought down a few levels. The famous, I think it's in the Gemara Brachos itself, maybe it's a Rishva, now I'm forgetting, that it's in the Gemara, that when you don't make a bracha, when you eat without making a bracha, you're stealing. So we assume that means we're stealing the food from God, right? That it belongs to God. But the answer really is that we're stealing the bracha from God. You ever hear that before? We're stealing the bracha from God. Because food is only here so that we make brachos. God could have easily made human beings that last 120 years without needing to put one thing in their mouth. And yet he did this so that there would be opportunities to make brachos. And when we don't, we're using the thing that was created in order to make a bracha, and we withheld the bracha. So we owed him a bracha, and we didn't give it to him. So we stole the bracha. And it's, you could think of it as, this is the world of Tov Hara, a world where I see food, and food's here for me to eat and enjoy, or I see brachos. I see opportunities to elevate, to spiritually connect. And when Yaakov took on this role, I don't think he was familiar with what he was getting himself into necessarily. Or maybe he was all too familiar with it and was unsure if this was something he could handle, if this was something that he wanted to take on, to now spend his life away from who he really is, to do this other path. And what's interesting is that the person who told him to do it is Rivka. And where did Rivka come from? From Galus. Rivka came from a house of a lot of ra, of a lot of bad, a house of Avodah Zarah. Yitzchak, on the other hand, came from a house of only chesed, and only light, and only good. He was so pure that he literally couldn't come into contact. He couldn't leave his Dalet Amos. It probably made very little sense for Yitzchak that someone like Yaakov would be able to take on this role of Golos. Yitzchak could barely think of himself as walking out of Eretz Israel. He wasn't allowed to. How could Yaakov do that? It made perfect sense in Yitzchak's mind that Esav would be the Golos guy. Ya'av Yitzchak as Esav, you know. Whereas Rivka, perhaps more than anyone else in the whole picture, was aware that there is such a thing as a Jew living in Galus and finding God. Even if your own family, even if everything around you as a Avodah Zarah is bad, there's a way to live in that world and still find the good and be good. And maybe it was Dafka her, only her, that could have saw in Yaakov this ability to live in Galus, in literally her house, in Beit Lavan, and still make it as a Jew, and still succeed. So if you think about it, Yaakov is really this 2.0 version of Adam HaRishon. Adam himself was someone who had this plan A life, live in Gan Eden, everything was supposed to be great, stay here. Perhaps God intended that we all were born in Gan Eden and spend our whole life eating wheat from trees and davening a musical halal and running gemachs all day and just living that life. And then there was this other version of it. Again, whether it's tied to sinning or whether God said this is how Olam Hazeh is supposed to go for another shir, where we need to actually take a step out of Gan Eden and find God that way. And we see this tension within Yaakov's life himself, where he had this Gan Eden life, and God said, no, I need you to take this other path as well. And the Maharal on the last source on the page, with this we'll finish, explains, Ki haya li Yaakov tselem Adam Harishon. Yaakov actually looked like Adam Harishon. There's a very big connection between Yaakov and Adam. That Yaakov was mitakein the chet of Adam Harishon as well. Ukumo shemal is Yaakov hu atzelem eloki be'emesh ay Adam Harishon v'zeh yarash Yaakov mimenu. Kach yarash Esav es big day Adam Harishon. Yaakov had the face of Adam Harishon. Esav had the clothes of Adam Harishon. Now remember, at the end of the whole sequence of the brachos, Yitzchak smells Esav's Yaakov's clothes, the ones that Rivka gave him that were Esav's, and he says it smells like the sadeh. Chazal say what sadeh was Yitzchak referring to? Gan Eden, the reach shel Gan Eden. This was the clothes of Adam Harishon that Esav got. Ukamosh Amar ben Medrash, as big day Esav benam gadol chamudos vayodei v'gadayim mis dameh ke Adam. Afki eno Adam be'emes. Go to the second to last line of Kasher Tizbonin be'inin ha'tzelem ha'eloki be'inin ha'kavod she'hatzelem hu inyan eloki ba'atzmo aval ein ha'kavod devar atzmi rak kavod neged ha'olam. Fine. Lekach, the bold at the end, lekach Yaakov yeshlo chelek be'ikar ve'esav yeshlo chelek be'gadim. Yaakov yarash malas ha'adam be'atzmo, kemosh amarnu, ve'esav yarash malas ha'begadim, mizdameh ke'adam. That they were actually, again echoing this idea, both inheriting these two different aspects of Adam. One as the person himself, and one as the clothing of Adam, or the Gashmi part of Adam, the Olam Hazeh part of Adam. And whereas Yaakov originally was meant to simply fulfill this Gan Eden-like destiny that Adam was meant to fulfill, he eventually had to put on the clothes. He had to wear the jacket that Esav got, and walk out of Gan Eden himself the way Adam did. And when did Adam get these clothes?
The sin.
Before the sin, Adam didn't have clothes. The first time that Adam got clothes was Vayetze Adam, Megan Eden. The clothes represented this journey. The clothes that Esav got because he was meant to take that journey. He was meant to go into Galus. But Yaakov instead was the one who ended up going into Galus. And what's fascinating here is we're talking about two people's lives. And yet, we're uncovering from these small events literally the secrets of creation, of history, of our destiny as people, of the two different paths that we take, which, by the way, we have both inside of us, both the Geula side and the Gula side. We can view it as Sheshes Yimei Maisa and Shabbos, that we're meant to live this dual life, that we were never meant to have only one of them in us. And that's why we have different seasons. That's why we have changes. When we get to Hanukkah, the whole idea is that it needs to be in darkness, that there needs to be a persume nisa only when it's dark. And then when we have Pesach on the other end, when it's spring, when there needs to be a lighting up of things, or it needs to be God lighting up the night in that sense. And it's really the story of the soul as well, where we originated from the Kisei HaKavod, from Hashem himself in Shamayim, and then God kicks us out and says, go find your way back. And this is the age-old story that we are simply embodying. And by the way, if you look in the Derech Hashem, this was meant to be the story of all of humanity. But it didn't end up going that way because of some unfortunate events, starting from the generations before Noah and the Dor HaMavol, and even the generations after, which is why God had to choose to go with Avraham. this is the story that we are meant to fulfill. And that's why, it's funny, when I sing the song of Lashon HaBavi Yerushalayim, so it's a nice song. It's a song we sing as a tradition two different times during the year, I believe. Not more than that. One is on Pesach, and one is on Yom Kippur. Now, why those two times? Those two times, because those two days were so intimately connected with the avoda of the Mikdash. Yom Kippur, the whole day was what the Kohen Gadol did. There was actually very little for us to do. We just watched. We were bystanders. And we did a little vidui. Pesach, the whole holiday was the Karban Pesach. That was it. You're missing... We don't know what it means to have a Karban Pesach, so we think Pesach is everything else. Actually, everything else is like dessert. The Karban Pesach was the holiday. That's what you did. That's what everyone did. And without it, we're just playing the part. And at the same time, when we sing Lashon HaBa and think of that Geula time, it also reminds us that there's this other tafkid of ours, that there's this other journey that we're supposed to be going on, one that seems to not be done yet, but one that's not ours alone, one that started from Yaakov himself. And hopefully we could take chizuk from this journey of Yaakov that maybe started with Adam HaRishon and was inherited by us through Esav, really, and can use it to be mechazik ourselves in this galus, this dark galus that is taking us in weird directions every single day. And hopefully we will be the ones to see the light at the end of the galus and get out and reach the Geula Shleima. B'mehera b'yameinu.
I want to thank Mari again for giving the first of what Please Gadol will be every Monday night.